Welcome, volleyball fans, to the 5-1 Volleyball Podcast, the most in-depth, the most detailed, the most comprehensive volleyball podcast on the market right now. My name is Dan, and today I'm bringing you another mailbag podcast. If you follow my Instagram, at 51VB, I put up a story this morning soliciting questions from all my followers, and you guys had the opportunity to ask your questions. I got a lot of good ones, so today is just going to be a random selection of all those questions. Hopefully I get to yours if you're listening to this and you asked a question on my Instagram story. So let's get into answering some questions. The first one is from a friend of the show, Micah Skinner. And he asks how long the current crop of superstars like Zaitsev, Bruno, Lucas, Mazursky, guys like that, how long do you think they'll last? How long do you think their primes will be? How many more years are they going to be good players? My answer to that would be, it's a bit of a cop-out, but it depends on which player it is, what position they are, how tall they are, things like that. Everyone ages differently, but generally around 34, 35 is when you start seeing like a pretty rapid and significant decline in terms of athleticism for a lot of these guys. Sometimes it's a little earlier. Sometimes it's a little later. Setters tend to last a bit longer. Just because they rely on their athleticism a little bit less. Your hands don't really get worse as you age. So you see guys like William Arjona still playing for the Brazilian national team despite being almost 40. Loy Ball still playing volleyball all the time. Hands don't really degrade as you get older, so that's why setters are able to stay in the game a bit longer than other positions. We also see that with liberos. Alexei Verbov still playing at an extremely high level, despite being in his, I believe, 36 or 37. So should definitely not the athlete he used to be, but if you're a libero, all that matters is how you touch the ball, your game sense, your feel, and your reaction time. So if that stays at a high level, then you're good to go. Tall players we also see last a bit longer just because you don't rely on your athleticism quite as much. You're not jumping as high. Just because you're taller, you need to jump less to get to the ball and to get to your position. So tall players like Mazursky, although Mazursky is so tall that this is probably going to cause him health issues down the line. But tall players like Alessandro Fei tend to last a bit longer as well. Especially tall middles like Simon and Mazursky will probably make the switch to opposite as their career goes on. But I would say for this current crop of Brazilian players, Lucas, Bruno, Wallace, those kinds of guys, I would say 2020 Olympics is their last realistic run of it before they get too old to compete at a high level. They'll probably still play for their club teams, and a couple of them might still be on the 2024 team, but that's going to be their last realistic shot at winning a medal and competing at a high level in an international competition. And I would say the same for the Russians, Mazursky and Butko. I would say this is their last chance as well for them, and probably Mikhailov too. I mean, Mikhailov's the one player I could see playing at an extremely high level till he's like 38, just because he's taking care of his body so well. He really pays attention to the small things, and he's just an incredible all-around player. And then as for the Italians, Osmani Wantarena and Ivan Zaitsev, you can see that Wantarena, we'll talk about him a bit more later, but he's already considering stepping away from the Italian national team. Zaitsev, again, I'd say Zaitsev and Wantarena, and probably Kalachi. This 2020 will be their last, again, chance at competing internationally on a high level, and then the decline could take a while because, again, a lot of these guys are starting from such an absurdly high skill level that the decline, even if they decline by like 40%, they're still going to be acceptably good professional players. But yeah, as for competing for the national teams, that's probably it for them. 2020 is probably when you're going to see a lot of players step away from the national team, as you do with every Olympic cycle. We have a few more great questions from Micah. He asks about the Polish opposite battle, which, if you're not familiar with that, Poland has just like an incredible amount of good opposites. I'm going to name some of the big ones we saw. Bartosz Kurek, Dawid Kornarski, and Damian Szulc get a lot of minutes for the Polish national team this summer, but they also have many more guys. I'm probably not even going to name like half the really good Polish opposites, but we're seeing Maciej Muzaj have an unbelievable season with Gdańsk. Very high probability of winning the Plusliga MVP this season. We have Lukasz Kaczmarek, who is doing a great job of being one of the main scoring options in Zaxa Kędzierzyn Koźle this season. Bolac is having a great season with Friedrich Schaffen. Carol Butrin is one of the leading scorers in the Plusliga, playing for Katowice. There's just, that's not even all of them. Jakub Zebrowski is an up-and-coming guy who's playing for Lubin this season. There's just so many ways you could go with it, and it's going to be tough for Vitor Hanin choosing who to go with this summer. Obviously, Bartosz Kurek is definitely going to be handed the starting role if he wants it, just given that he was the World Championships MVP, and he seems to have really found his stride again after struggling for a couple seasons in Turkey, but then having just an unbelievable summer with the Polish national team, and then he's having a great season with Warszawa as well. Personally, I wouldn't have Dawid Konarski on the national team. I think he's a fairly overrated player. I definitely think Kaczmarek and probably Bolaj are better, but he seems to have a lot of clout within the national team organization, so I'm assuming he will be picked as well. And as for that third one, I think Shells is going to be the one who's cut. We've seen Hanin kind of be willing to go with different lineups every time. He knows that there's a lot of Polish players competing at a high level for these spots, and Shells has just had a pretty disappointing regular season with Asseco Resovia not even starting with him right now. Another Polish opposite, Jakub Żeraj, is starting for Resovia at the moment. So I can definitely see Shells, even though he was pretty good in the minutes he got, actually played significant minutes at important times in the World Championship, so he might have an advantage there, but I do think Kaczmarek should be the next option. Or Maciej Muzaj, obviously, having just an unbelievable season. I think one of those two will be the third option for the major Olympic qualifiers, I think, what is the biggest tournament in the summer. But we'll see. Nations League, it doesn't really matter. Who cares? But probably going to see, I think, Kaczmarek or Muzaj in that third opposite spot. Or maybe Hanin will be smart and drop Konarski and bring Muzaj and Shells or Kaczmarek. The next topic I'm going to go over is that Osmani Wantarena recently declared that he will actually play in the Olympic qualifiers taking place this summer, which is fantastic news for the Italian volleyball team, because with Luigi Randozzo out with an injury that he sustained earlier this season, they really were going to have to, I don't know who they were going to start it outside. Like, it probably would have been Mariotti or something, someone who you should not be starting if you're in a position to qualify for the Olympics. But now they can have Lanz and Wantarena, which has actually worked pretty well as an outside hitting combo. Or they could go with Wantarena and Oleg Antonov if Antonov is able to play in the tournament. Or whoever they go with, Wantarena and whoever. Honestly, it doesn't matter. Lanza works well because he's a good second option as an outside, good passer, good defender. Can't really hit or serve, but he's good at the other stuff. So this massively increases Italy's chances of qualifying for the Olympics, which, believe it or not, it was actually a good chance that they weren't going to do it. They had Serbia in the pool, who, even with Wantarena back, I would still probably favor Serbia over Italy, just because, I mean, the outsides and middles on Serbia are just pretty much some of the best in the world. Wantarena coming back definitely helps. We'll make that a competitive pool, the top winner of each pool, automatic berth in the Olympics. So, huge sigh of relief for Italian fans. It's not over yet by any means. They still have to go out and actually qualify, but this will make things a lot easier because it was going to get weird. Dick Coy apparently is being nationalized as an Italian. He was probably going to play if not for Wantarena. I mean, he still might play, but a lot less to worry about if you're an Italian volleyball fan. Next question from Micah. Guys, if you want to ask multiple questions, go ahead. If they're good, I'm going to answer all of them. So don't be afraid to only ask one per episode. Ask as many as you want, whenever you want. I'll try and get to them. So Micah asks, what's going to happen if the Euro teams send their B teams to the World Cup? So if you didn't know, the World Cup happening in October of this year, kind of the last international competition before the club season starts. Traditionally, the winner gets an Olympic qualifying berth. But this year, that's not happening because of the new format they're using to qualify for the Olympics and the different international qualifying tournaments, like the mini pools they're doing. So this year, the World Cup is, I guess, just for show. International ranking points as well, I believe. So it'll be interesting to see, because the Europeans have Eurovolley 2019 immediately before, at least on the men's side, immediately before the World Cup. So those guys are going to be exhausted. They're going to have Nations League. They're going to have European gold and silver leagues, if they're doing that, they're going to have the Olympic qualifier tournaments. Then they're going to have the Euro Volley, which is a pretty grueling tournament in and of itself. So it's likely that teams like Russia, Poland, Italy, teams that are competing in the World Cup and have had a really tough and brutal summer, especially right after Euro Volley, they're going to send their B teams to the World Cup. Personally, I see no problem with this, especially as a Canadian fan that has a much higher chance for a medal if the Europeans send their B teams. If the FIVB wants to have this tournament, especially in a year that there's so much else going on during the summer is just absolutely jam-packed with volleyball right after, obviously, a really grueling club season. So these guys are playing all year round, and having them fly to Japan just a couple days after they play an insanely competitive tournament in France, I do not blame them one bit if the A players want to sit. And honestly, I'd be down to see some like the Russian and Italian and Polish B team guys. Those guys are still pretty good. A lot of them would still be competitive. They might not win the tournament, but definitely I'd be totally fine with it. Like if we're going to have this much volleyball, then I say let the national federations pick and choose which tournaments are the most important, because there's no point in getting some of your best players injured playing in this essentially meaningless World Cup. It's for ranking points, it's for bragging rights. That's pretty much it. There's no Olympic qualifying berth. The monetary prizes, whatever. It's good if you come in first, but probably losing money from any other position. So, yeah, I can see why the European federations do this. Who knows if they'll do it? I'm not saying they will, not saying they won't. Just I'm saying I would understand if they send their B team. So thanks, Micah, for all those questions. Really great, really fun to answer, but we're going to get to some other people's questions now. Jornay Timmerman asks, which pro league do you enjoy the most? CEV Champions League, Volleyball Nations League, etc. I would say I think the World Championships was probably one of my favorite competitions, obviously the Olympics. Mostly because I get to follow my Canadian men's national team, which is, I don't really root for a specific club team. I'm more just a fan of watching club volleyball overall. So I would say the tournaments that mean something that the Canadian men's national team participate in, I would say those are definitely my favorites. Nations League is a bit tougher because I just feel bad for the players having to go to all those different locations and play. But I would say it's still fun to watch as a fan, especially the final six. I hope my Canadians can make it again this year. But it's always in the back of your head that the tournament doesn't count for a lot. So I would say the Olympics, World Championships, and formerly the World Cup were my favorite tournaments to watch. So I would say this year the tournament I'm looking forward to watching the most this summer is the Olympic qualifiers tournaments for sure. As for the pro side, I mean, I love Champions League. It's so much fun to watch. Just seeing the best clubs from different countries battle it out. Really entertaining to watch, and you can tell that the players, that's the tournament that they focus on the most. That's the one they put the most stake in. And then as for domestic professional leagues, probably Italy and Poland, just because those two are super accessible. It's not particularly tough to watch pretty much every game. Really quite easy to follow compared to like Russia and Brazil sometimes. So I would say those two leagues are my favorite to watch for the pro side. But you know me, I like watching pretty much any volleyball that exists. Gray Discourage, who I know has asked questions before, asks, who do I have winning Volleyball Nations League? And I know Poland is the winner of the World Championships. Russia was the winner of last Nations League, and France came very close. But I would say the team that I think is going to win this year is actually going to be the Americans, because I just went back and watched the semifinal game where they played Poland in the World Championships, and man, they were just a couple unforced errors away from winning that game. And in my opinion, if the Americans won that semifinal game, they would have gone on to 3-0 Brazil as well. So I think the Americans playing on their home soil, Thomas Jeschke should be back, TJ DeFalco should be ready to go. Like all their players are just looking so good in their club seasons. Taylor Sander, Micah Christensen, Aaron Russell, Max Holt, Jeffrey Gendrick, Eric Shoji, all those guys. That's such an insanely stacked team. They've won a lot of bronze medals here, but I think this is finally going to be the tournament where they put it all together in front of the home crowd at Chicago, which hopefully I will be attending as well. It's not too far from where I am. Hugo Van Garderen asks, What did you think of Bruno Resende's performance in the CV Champions League? And why did you think Gdansk was so good? So as for Bruno, I think this Lubitsch Ivitanova team is actually really coming together a lot more recently. And a big part of that, I think Bruno's playing a lot better. He's found the tempo, found the timing with Juan Torena, Simon, and Sokolov. Great players, but a lot of them are pretty particular about where they want the ball. So I think Bruno, obviously an incredible setter, and he's really figured that out. And those guys are playing a lot better now. I think he's, especially in the Champions League, I think Bruno's been running that offense beautifully. I think there's a very high chance they could make the finals, especially because I believe Perugia and Zenit Kazan are matching up on the other side of the bracket. So I would say Lube is definitely the favorite to make it out of their side of the bracket. Although they did have a pretty tough game with Dynamo Moscow this week. And the other part of the question, why is Gdansk so good? Man, I have no idea. I think if I had to put any reason on it, I think that team's in the Plusliga game plan for Maciej Muzaj a lot better. They all know who he is, what he's about. He's played on like half the team. So basically Gdansk is a one-man show with Maciej Muzaj in terms of their offense. Their defense is very well done overall, but I think teams in the Plusliga are more like, okay, we do everything we can. Our only focus is taking Maciej Muzaj out of the game, try and force Muzaj into as many uncomfortable positions as possible, and whatever, Mihailovic and Ruben Schott, let them do whatever they want. Just we're not worried about them. We're worried about Maciej Muzaj. I think that's the way you got to play Gdansk. And I think a lot of the teams in the Champions League are maybe respecting Gdansk's middles and Mihailovic and Schott too much. And if you're not getting a good double or triple on Maciej Muzaj, he's going to score. That's the level he's playing at right now. But it's also, I think, a lot of luck just, getting the right matchups, playing well at the right time. You know, that kind of thing. Volleyball can be a streaky sport sometimes. WM Robbins 8 asks, teach us how the Overseas League works. A lot of my buddies and I have no idea, I guess, how they work. That's actually a really good question. That's probably one of the next couple of YouTube videos I'm doing. If you don't know, I do have a YouTube channel called 5-1 Volleyball. So I'll let you know on the podcast when that video comes out, because I agree, there's not really any explanation of how the leagues work, especially if you're a North American sports fan. A lot of the European leagues can just be downright weird sometimes. Sorry, Europeans, but things work differently over here. So I remember when I first started watching professional volleyball that I was a bit uncomfortable and unaware of how everything worked over here. But I think I've got a good handle on it now, obviously. So I would love to do a video, maybe a podcast too, but definitely a video explaining how the leagues worked. So you're just going to have to wait for that for maybe a couple more weeks, but it's coming. And we got a couple of setter related questions here. GK Amart asks, who's your all-time favorite setter? And for that one, I got to go with my guy, Loy Ball. I'm kind of biased towards his era of players, in particular when it comes to like my favorite overall players, just because they were playing at a time when I was kind of like growing up. And you know, those players you watch when you were a bit younger, they kind of maybe leave a bit more of an imprint on you rather than the good players when you're older. Like in basketball, like LeBron James will always be my favorite player just because he was the main guy when I was going like through my teen years. And same thing with Loy Ball and like Reed Pretty and Jiba and Dante Amaral and all that era of guys are some of my favorite players. So for setting, I'm going to have to go with Loy Ball, that American national team. Love going back and watching their highlights. Just a really physical, fun, like energetic, but serious team. So Loy Ball, all-time favorite setter. Might change though. There's a lot of good setters in volleyball right now. Speaking of that, Kelsey asks, who is the most up-and-coming setter in pro volleyball? And pretty much the answer to that for the last 5 years would have been Simone Giannelli. So we forget, he's only 22 still. He's kind of still an up-and-comer, but not really, obviously. He's been playing pro for a long time. So probably the best setter that maybe some of you haven't heard about yet. Mentioned this guy last week in my podcast, but I'm going to have to go with Mika Ma'a, playing on UCLA right now, American setter. He is currently a senior, so he will be starting his professional career soon. And just a great overall player, really athletic for a setter. Jumps quite high, hits the ball hard, plays as a outside hitter sometimes for UCLA. They have some weird rotations. So even though he's probably going to be in the shadow of Micah Christensen for the next few years on USA Volleyball, wherever he lands for his pro career, he's going to give them quite a boost. I think he can start on a fairly good team right away, and he's the best setting prospect we've had in a little while. And now we have a great series of questions from Jeff ABC18. Seems like a Canadian volleyball fan based on the questions he's asked, but these are really smart. He definitely knows what he's talking about. Anyway, first one, he asks, do you expect Shawn, that's Shawn Vernon-Evans, Canadian opposite, to be Canada's next best opposite despite not starting in Poland? So for those of you who haven't been following Shawan's career, here's a quick background. He kind of burst onto the scene, playing for Team Canada in the 2017 World League, starting on the team, playing a huge role, one of our leading scorers. Just everyone was like, wow, this kid's incredible. And he was only, I think, 18 at the time. So pretty unprecedented for an 18-year-old to start on a team that wins bronze medal at Nation/World League, whatever it was called that year. So then he goes to the Plusliga and plays on Versava, which for North Americans, it's very rare not to go to college and play college sports before you go pro. Usually, you know, you do, especially for volleyball, it's pretty much everyone does 4 or 5 years in college and then goes pro. But Shawn Vernon-Evans decided not to go that route and go straight to the professional league and go to Versava, where he had a decent amount of success in his first year. Was a part-time starter, got in for a few matches. But Nikola Georgiev was the main starter, and he's an extremely good player. I believe he played in Japan this year. So that's fair that Shawn was not starting over him just because Nikola, you know, he's a major part of the Macedonian national team. So you can't really expect a 19-year-old to start over him. And then this year, the Versava started off the season with Shawn Vernon-Evans and Rafael Arruyo, the Brazilian opposite, who has spent some time with the national team, but he's kind of one of those borderline guys. And obviously, Brazil has plenty of good opposites, but he was playing out of his mind at the beginning of the season, actually leading the Plusliga in MVPs, like match MVPs, for most of the start of the season. So he ended up beating Shawan for the starting spot, even though Shawan still got his opportunities. I wouldn't say made the most of them, because he still had a few struggles from his game, but didn't do too badly. And also, I forgot to mention, Shawan suffered an injury. I think it was like February or March of 2018. So he missed a lot of that last pro season. And then this year, 2018 Nations League as well. Anyway, back to this year. So Rafael Arruyo has been starting over Shawan. Again, Shawan's getting in for some of the matches. But, you know, not playing his best ball ever. But that's fair. He's still kind of coming back from the injury a bit, as we saw in the World Championships. But then Szczecin, the club that folded this year, had Bartosz Kurek, and Warszawa ended up being the team that won the Bartosz Kurek sweepstakes, brought in Bartosz Kurek to their team. And obviously, no one's going to start over Bartosz Kurek, especially fresh off his World Championships MVP. So Rafael Arruyo was on the bench, and Shawan was not even dressing for games a lot of the time because he was the third opposite. Can't really blame him for the situation. It's a tough situation to be in because they brought in Kurek and he was kind of expected to be. And it's tough for Shawan because even though he was not expected really to be the full-time starter, he still wanted to get minutes and play meaningful game time. So it was tough. There were a lot of games he was watching from the stands. Then Rafael Arruyo was kind of mad that he did not have the starting spot too. So he left the team. And right now, where we are right now, is that Shawan is back in the bench role. I haven't seen a Versava game since then, but obviously there's no reason to take Bartosz Kurek out unless it's playing against a bad team and you want to give them some rest. So I would say, you know, it's not a super promising sign. It's not like a good thing that he hasn't been playing for his club teams, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's a sign that he's like been a bust since we all saw him in 2017. But I would say definitely give him another year to sort things out. Probably I would recommend he goes to a team where he can start and play meaningful minutes and show what he's got. We'll see. This year, I'm sure he'll be a big part of the Nations League, big part of our Olympic qualifying tournament. Ryan Sklater has been playing really well, too, for Team Canada. But I would say definitely still Shawan is going to be Canada's next big opposite. And I still think he's going to be one of the best players in the world. Remember that he's still only 20 years old, maybe 21 now. So I think he would be a junior in college. So still very young. Still has tons of opportunities to become a great player. Jeff also asks if Canada's men's team will qualify for the Olympics and what will their projected starting roster be? And I would say they will qualify for the Olympics. The only real tough opponent they have in their qualifying tournament this summer is Argentina. And I know I'm biased as a Canadian volleyball fan, but I think Canada definitely will have the upper hand over Argentina. And as for the projected starting roster, I think it's going to be Gord Perrin and Stephen Marr on the outsides. You have Shuan, as mentioned earlier, as your starting opposite. You have definitely Graham Vigrass as one of your starting middles. And then you have Blair Ban as your libero and TJ Sanders, who should be nice and healthy by then, as your setter. The tough spot is the second middle. There's a few different ways you could go with it. You could definitely go with Lucas Van Berkel. I think that would be the safest option. He played really well for us this summer, and he's having a heck of a season with Frankfurt for his pro club team. You could also go with Daniel Jansen Van Doorn, but he actually ended his contract early with his Finnish team to work on his back, do some back rehab. So not sure how healthy he'll be. And he wasn't starting full time in the summer when he was healthy anyway, or maybe he wasn't healthy at that time. I don't know. Arthur Schwark. I haven't been following his club team in France too closely, but he could also be an option. And then we'll see if Dane and Kofi Jima, if this is the year that he finally gets the opportunity to prove himself on the men's senior team. So you could go a lot of different ways with it. Maybe Danny Dimienko gets a look at the senior national men's team as well. So I think everything's pretty much set except for that second middle spot. The third question from Jeff is, who's one current male in the CIS NCAA that might start for Team Canada in the future? So, I mean, I'm going to go with the really obvious one here, and that's Eric Lepke of the Trinity Western Spartans. He's actually already played a few matches for the men's senior national team at the Hubert Wagner Memorial Tournament in Poland that happens every summer. As for when he's going to start, it's pretty much as soon as he's better than Stephen Marr, Nicholas Hoag, and Jason DeRocco, which is probably going to be in the next 2 or 3 years, I would say. Probably not for Tokyo 2020, but pretty soon after that, Eric will be an integral part of the Canadian senior national team. But he's not the only one, I'm sure. There's other players who could for sure start. And Jeff's last question is not a Canadian national team question. He asks, what's a common rule you see being broken in local leagues that people don't know about? And I would actually say, for the most part, local refs, I find, tend to call stuff a lot stricter, actually, than refs for the FIVB. I chalk it up to, you know, local reffing volleyball, especially at a local league level, can be kind of boring. So I find a lot of local refs like to kind of power trip a lot. And if they see any rotation or anything on the ball, they love to call doubles and lifts, even where I would definitely argue would never get called in a professional match. As for the rules that I see being broken, I would say one of them is people reach over the net a lot in local leagues, and I never pretty much see that one be called when a lot of times it's illegal if the setter is trying to make a play on it. And then the other one would be if you try and, you know, make that play where you push the ball into an opponent's block and out, a lot of people disagree with you when you try and explain to them that the ball touched them last and it's actually your point. People will definitely argue with you on that one at the local league level, but fine volleyball for the most part. People are pretty honest, call their own stuff. But of course, you always get that guy once in a while who will never call their own block touches and stuff like that. XVBMDYF asks, do you ever think volleyball will ever be mainstream? This is a topic I think about a lot, and I think I've talked with Everett about this before and other people in volleyball. And I think it could be eventually, but there's a couple of things that need to change in order for the sport to grow. I think one of them is that a lot of people kind of see volleyball as like a casual sport that you just play with your friends, you know, you hit the beach, you play in local co-ed teams that no one knows how to play, stuff like that. It's seen as a kind of like recreational casual sport. Even though tons of people play volleyball, a lot of people don't like care or know about the pro game, at least here in Canada and the United States. And I think the first thing that needs to change is that people need to start watching and following pro volleyball a lot more seriously. And I think that's one of the reasons why I do these podcasts and my Instagram and the YouTube videos, is to try and show people that, at least in North America, that there is a real professional volleyball leagues and that it's a real thing and that Europe knows what they're doing. They have like volleyball is taken seriously there and that kind of thing. So I think, yeah, that's the most important thing, is making people aware of the professional game and trying to get more money into the sport and get more players into the sport. The other thing volleyball has going for it is that there's very few concussions compared to sports like football, American, and soccer, football, and basketball, and rugby, and all those sports, there's tons of concussions. It's really dangerous for your brain. I think a lot of parents are realizing this and pulling, especially American football and rugby, parents are pulling their kids out of those sports. And volleyball is one of the only team sports left. Obviously, basketball is a big one too. But I think once people realize how dangerous concussions are, because there's really a lot of research being done that says that getting the concussion is one of the worst non-fatal injuries you can have in terms of outcome of the quality of your life. So, bit of a heavy topic there, but I think that's actually an argument that resonates with a lot of people, that you can put your kids in this sport that's a team sport. That's an important one, because you know, you could get them to play golf or tennis or something, but volleyball is a team sport that doesn't involve a lot of concussions. So it's a really like safe, fun activity for kids to play. And the more kids you have playing, the more popular the sport is at the professional level and at the adult level. So that's another reason. I'd say the last reason volleyball is kind of being held back right now is, I'd say, a lack of imagination, maybe, and energy from the league's organizing bodies like the FIVB and CEV. I mean, I understand that they do have limited resources to work with, but I would say there needs to be maybe a more like youthful energy and excitement and like fire and passion within those organizations. I mean, all of you probably have your own gripes with how they run things, but stuff like confusing tournament formats, overworking the players for kind of meaningless tournaments, the lack of supporting media for a lot of the events, and of course all the paywalls that they introduced recently, and just kind of like not the best understanding of how sports leagues should be run in 2019. They seem to be maybe stuck in the past for a bit. So I think eventually those leagues, those governing bodies will get there, hopefully, but I would say they could jumpstart volleyball's growth by like a decade if they looked towards something like the NBA, which I think is the most well-run sports league for kind of the modern, young modern fan. But I am pretty optimistic about the growth of the sport. I think a lot of people in volleyball have, you know, been around it for like 30 years, and they have seen it still be a niche sport after all this time and get kind of pessimistic. But I've seen a lot of young people come to the sport over the last few years. I've seen the media coverage get a lot better over the last few years, and the level of play in professional volleyball is just insane right now. It's so much better than it was like 20 or even 20 years ago. The play now is just light years ahead of what it was. So I think there's a lot of room to grow still. I think the next generation of athletes in our sport will be even better. So I think as the players get better, there gets more media coverage from people like myself and Everett from Volleyball Source, and people are kind of familiar with how sports fans consume sports in 2019. I think volleyball, maybe not in the next 5 years, maybe not even in the next 10 years, maybe not in the next 20 years, but I think eventually it will become a fairly mainstream sport. Probably never on the level of soccer or football or basketball, but I think it could, it's a contender to be kind of right after that, maybe above hockey and baseball, which, let me tell you, is sacrilegious to say as a Canadian, but I would be very happy if there is more volleyball on TSN and less hockey. TerryJ68 asks, what are some wages of professional volleyball players in various countries? And I actually don't really know exactly, even pro players that I'm friends with personally. It's not something we really talk about that much. I know like for a lot of the lower level leagues, it's basically they just give you a house, pay you like your per diem. Like basically you get a paid for vacation, but you're not really making enough money to like save up after or retire off that money. But obviously the players like at the highest level, like Wilfredo Leon and Ivan Zaitsev and those guys, they're making definitely well into the six figures, maybe even seven figures for Leon, depending on what his next deal is. But I think most kind of starters in Italy and Russia and Poland are making probably, I would say, just over 100K, but maybe less, maybe like, depending on, it honestly depends what country. Poland's kind of tough because even if you're making a decent amount of money in Polish zlotys, you're not making a lot in other currencies because it doesn't translate well. The euro is a bit better to be paid in. Honestly, it's a topic that I would like to discuss further, but it's kind of tough to bring up around people because people don't really enjoy talking about their salaries that much. Pavel Tatyukin, shout out to Pavel, playing on Belgorod right now in Russia. And I talked about him on my Best Prospects in Volleyball podcast, so shout out to him. Thanks for the question. He asks, make your top 10 coaches right now. And apologies to Pavel, probably not going to name 10, just because I don't know. Coaching is something that I want to learn more about, but at the moment I haven't spent a ton of time thinking about like the best coaches in the world. And I do think it's something that it is important in the scheme of things of volleyball, but I think game planning in an individual volleyball match is not as important as it is in most other sports, like in basketball and soccer and football and sports like that. So, but I agree that coaching is really important for organizing the team and practicing and developing game plans. So anyway, my favorite coaches right now, I think the best coach has to be Vital Hanen. You see what he's done with Friedrich Schaffen. Just incredible. That team always plays so far above their talent level. I would say like coached by someone else. We'll see what happens next year, but I doubt they'd be as high in the German league if they didn't have Vital Hanen. And of course, bringing that Polish team, which remember, not a lot of people expected Poland to be a finals contender in the World Championships, but he got them not just to the finals, but actually won them the gold medal. So I'd say Vital Hanen is probably the best coach right now. Another guy I like is Mark Lebedew, coaching as Zawrócki in Poland. I think he's a really smart guy. He has this really good blog called At Home on the Court, so check that out if you want to read about coaching philosophy. I think he has some really good things to say. I think he's a really smart guy. And Zawrócki, another team, they're in the Plusliga playoffs, and again, coached by someone else. I doubt a team in that talent level would make it that far. I like John Sparrow, the USA national team, coach of UCLA. Always tries really creative stuff, especially with UCLA. You have Dane and Jimma hitting on the outside sometimes. You have Mika Ma'a hitting on the wings. He's their setter. You have 6-2s. You just have a bunch of weird stuff going on. I love coaches who are willing to try out creative plays and weird stuff. I would say Roberto Piazza, the coach of Spakra Belchatov, and just announced as the coach of the Dutch men's national team. I think he's a great coach that's really good at working with the tools he's given. We've seen him get really creative with Skra this year, with all the injuries they had, playing one middle lineups, playing Milad Abatapour out of the middle, playing Rene Tapan out of the middle. Some cool stuff. I think he's really good at adapting to circumstances. I really like Ben Josephson, who's probably someone that not a lot of you have heard of because he's just recently kind of come onto the scene. He's the coach of the Trinity Western Spartans in the Canadian college system. He's just really another guy who like has a really good coaching philosophy, really good at like kind of managing the relationships between players, making sure everyone's working towards one goal. I think he's working as an assistant to the women's Canadian national team this year, but I'm sure at some point he's going to be the head coach of either the Canadian men's or women's team if he wants to be. Some guys like to stay in their college program. I actually really liked former Canadian coach Stefan Antiga, who won that medal with Poland at the 2014 World Championships and has taken the Canadian national team to new heights. I think he injected a lot of energy into the Canadian national team program, really made them believe that they could actually go out and win games against really internationally strong teams, and that's exactly what they went out and did. I think he's good at game management. We see in all his tournaments, he rolls with a lot of different lineups, like Stephen Marr will be starting one game, and then Hoag will be starting one game, and then Jason DeRocca will be starting one game, and then Ryan Sklader will play some, and then Shawan will play some. So he's really good at mixing and matching lineups, but making sure everyone's on the same page regardless. I would say some of the more overrated coaches are kind of the older guys who haven't been able to adapt as quickly to the modern game, guys like Julio Velasco, guys like Stoichev, who you see have struggled. I mean, those guys are pretty close to retirement, but you see sometimes they struggle with the personalities of the younger players because players are less willing to just listen to whatever the coaches say now, and also struggling with kind of adapting to the pace and the diversity and the quickness and the creativity of the modern game. All right, we are in the home stretch here. This is a longer podcast. Thanks for all the questions, guys. This is really nice. Every mailbag, I've just gotten tons of really good questions. The next one comes from Declan, and he asks, okay, this is not a volleyball question, but he says, would you rather go sledding with a penguin or down a water slide with a seal? And he says, please answer. All right, Declan. Sledding with a penguin or down a water slide with a seal? I'm going to say definitely a water slide with a seal. First of all, I hate the cold. The winter this year was so long, so brutal, so cold, so icy. So if I could never see snow again in my life, I would be pretty happy. And I just would rather go somewhere warmer. And then also water slides are just, in general, more fun than sledding. I've been dog sledding before. It's pretty fun. I doubt a penguin could take you very far if a penguin was pulling the sled. So I would say, and also seals, I feel like, are the more fun animal than penguins. They're kind of like the dog of the sea. They're really affectionate, really nice. So I would say definitely waterside with the seal pretty comfortably. Mayon 4 asks, do liberos practice spiking or just defense? I mean, a lot of liberos are just former outsides that were too short to play at the next level. But yeah, they don't practice spiking during practice, but a lot of them are pretty good spikers. Most famously, Grebennikov is a fantastic attacker. A lot of times you'll see in like hitting lines before games, a lot of the liberos will take the first hit and then go receive. But yeah, I mean, maybe some of them practice spiking, but probably, yeah, not usually during practices. Rohit Sarkar 943 asks, Pro Volleyball League. That's not really a question. Sorry, Sarkar. Eli Bailey 97 asks, tell me about float serves. How do pro players get so much movement on the ball? So I would say, like any volleyball skill, it's just like mainly a lot of practice. But for float serves, you make sure you want to have a really flat palm when you contact the ball. You want to contact the ball like as close to the middle of the ball as possible, so there's absolutely no spin on it. And some people tell you to just like stop, like pop your hand when you hit the ball, but I like to follow through. I find that works better for me. But again, I'm not really like a coach or anything, so there's probably coaches who can explain that a lot better to you. And our last question, Askar2Amin asks, how can I come to FIVB? I love volleyball and it's my life. Well, I would say probably the most accessible tournament is the Nations League, if I'm taking this question seriously. So find out if there's a Nations League event happening near you. I assume it looks like an Iranian account, perhaps. So they always have a Nations League event in Iran. So find out where that's happening. Go see a live volleyball match. It's like probably one of the, actually, well, it's my personal favorite sport to watch live. It's going to a match is absolutely awesome. I know I'm going to the Nations League match in Canada this year and probably in Chicago as well. So yeah, go out, watch some live volleyball. You'll see the game completely differently and appreciate the speed of it a lot more. I think that's one of the things that doesn't translate very well on TV is just how freaking fast the game is at the highest level. All right, closing in on 45 minutes. So I think I'll end the podcast there. Thanks for all your questions. Once again, I hope I did a good job of answering them. Be a couple weeks before the next mailbag, but in the meantime, we'll have a pro recap probably on Monday or Tuesday. Try and figure something out fun to do next week. We got Canadian U Sports National Tournament happening this weekend. We got some great Italian League matches happening this weekend. So there's some fun stuff. Playoffs coming up soon, so not a lot of implications for the regular season now, but always some fun volleyball to be played. All right, have a good weekend, guys. Thanks for listening.